Welcome to Canucks Talk for another week here on Sportsnet 650. I'm Jamie Dodd, joined again by my co-host, Canucks insider Thomas Drantz, also covering the team for The Athletic. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. We are live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. What's going on, Drantz? Welcome back.
Thank you. Yeah. I'm,
how was the weekend?
Oh, it was awesome. I mean, we did a lot of hard work. We were hauling pavement.
Of course.
Yeah.
That classic signifier of hard work that we all understand.
A classic thing people do, haul pavement. Just to explain what's going on, Dom was joking about
how hard he works for 32 thoughts.
Because I was ripping him for taking every Friday off, and he responded with, "I'm hauling pavement." And
yeah, I made up a term. I can do that. It's a free country.
At which point I reminisced about a gentleman I went to university with. I invited him to a barbecue once, and he responded, "Heck yeah, man, let's fry up a roast." And then walked away before I could like do the math in my head of like, what does he think we're doing and how does he think we're going to
cook
it?
What do you think like a barbecue is?
I'm picturing you as the Zach Galifianakis meme with the numbers across the face.
Straight up. Or like anyone who John Lithgow ever talked to in Third Rock from the Sun.
Yeah, there you
just
go.
Like mouth agape. Anyway, fun weekend.
Anyways,
big win for the San Jose Sharks over the St. Louis Blues. Seals a Vancouver Canucks playoff berth. The Canucks then go on to eclipse 100 points with a win against the Anaheim Ducks. Playoff hockey, baby.
Playoff hockey
tickets
is coming.
Tickets are available.
That's right.
Like there are huge Canucks fans who had kids 10 years ago and have never been able to like take their kid who like now plays relatively high level hockey to a game. You know?
Yep.
Like, at the end of the day, as cynical as we want to be about it, like, that's what this is about. Canucks fans are going to have a chance to watch their team play playoff hockey live on home ice for the first time in a decade. Let's go.
Let's get into that and a whole lot more with the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, April 1st. And of course, starting with the headlines, which, as you said, the Canucks officially clinching a playoff spot over the weekend. And as much as there was not a lot of drama in this, we've known for months that the Canucks were going to the playoffs. And as much as it happened pretty anticlimactically after a couple of failed attempts to do it with a win on home ice, it happens due to the out-of-town scoreboard on Saturday. Whatever the case is, the key thing is, as you said, the Canucks are going back to the playoffs for the first time since the 2020 bubble, hosting playoff games for the first time since 2015. And then they followed up with a win, which you can get a little bit into because they kind of squeaked past the Ducks, the lowly Anaheim Ducks, 3-2 yesterday. But that gets them to the 100-point barrier. So a couple of significant milestones, obviously, over the weekend, clinching that playoff spot, eclipsing 100 points. And now with 8 games remaining in the schedule, still the division up for grabs. And Edmonton's playing really well right now. They're coming on strong. They blew out the Ducks on Saturday. But it feels like we can really officially turn our attention now to, as you said, look, playoff tickets are on sale. People are getting hyped up. People are making plans to really get invested in this. The calendar has turned over to April. We're in the playoff month. Like, it is truly playoff season now for the Vancouver Canucks and their fans in a way that it hasn't been, as you said, really since 2015.
Obviously, the rules changed in terms of how the NHL standings are tabulated during the 54-year history of this Vancouver Canucks franchise, but this is only the 10th time this team's gotten over 100 points. So this is like a pretty significant milestone. You know, they have 8 games left, too, right? There's 16 possible points still on the board. So they can't catch the 10-11 Canucks. And man, I would not be able to like stomach those comparisons. Remember earlier in the year?
We had people texting in earlier in the year, and I think I refused to read them on air. I was just like, I'm not going there.
We just didn't touch it for good reason. Anyway, the fact is that there's like a pretty clear path to having the third best. You only need 6 points to have the third best regular season performance by point totals in the history of this franchise. Like, Tocchet for sure is going to be one of, well, the second Canucks coach ever to coach a team to a 105-point season or better, joining Alain Vigneault, who did it 3 times. I mean, it really is remarkable the extent to which this team, you know, much like the tornado in The Wizard of Oz, ripped the ceiling off what we thought they could accomplish this season.
Mm-hmm.
They took the roof off.
Yes.
There is no ceiling.
Much like the tornado in The Wizard of Oz.
Much like that tornado.
Of course.
So...
That tornado was hauling pavement.
That tornado was hauling pavement.
Oh, man. Good one. Good one, Dom. I almost called you Toto. I actually like that joke. I'm serious. Let's just take a second and just note, because I do think it's clean, right? Like, the little X is beside their name.
Mm-hmm.
They've hit 100 points for the 10th time in franchise history. They're almost surely going to have the third most successful season in the history of this franchise. The other two, when the club won the President's Trophy. You know, there's going to be a ton of time, and we'll probably get into it, like, right now.
Yep.
To discuss, like, the little
the
things
form
around
and
the
all
edges,
that, 100%.
All the, you know, microanalyze it. But I do think this is, like, a clean moment, you know, to just... appreciate what a remarkable campaign this has been.
Well, and really, unlike another season that I can remember, because even, like, let's say they do finish with the third most points in team history behind the two President's Trophy
they
ones.
They only need 6 of their next 13 to
which
bet.
I would think they will do.
They're gonna.
But, you know, those two President's Trophy years, they were going in with Stanley Cup aspirations, right? They were regarded as legitimate Stanley Cup contenders. Of course, the second of one, they were coming off a Stanley Cup Finals appearance. And this one, to go from bubble playoff team to where they are now, as you said, kind of poised to have one of the best regular season performances in team history. They've been among the league leaders for so much of the year, you know, still in the running to finish first in the conference, really good shot to win their division, all of that. I can't really remember a surprise season quite like this one in Canucks history. If it's going this much of a pleasant surprise from game one through right now to hitting 100 points and clinching a playoff berth. And there's been some ups and downs in there. But when you step back and look at it in total, it's a really incredible accomplishment from where they were. I mean, heck, remember the game one of the preseason was a 10-0 loss against the Calgary Flames, right? Like, it wasn't as if even in training camp in the preseason, we were looking at this and saying, like, oh, something special is about to happen here. But from puck drop, they've been able to author that type of season. And again, I think it's just a really impressive accomplishment for Rick Tocchet and for the players on this team and for management as well for putting this group together that's
no
been
question.
Able to do this.
Well, all the glue guys, right, that have sort of – so I want to transition because I want to talk about the management side of this, all the glue guys, in a second. And I actually think it dovetails nicely with two bits of news that I think are fitting to include in the headlines. First is Canucks playoff tickets available now. People buying them quickly. They're expensive, but, you know, you get to see the Canucks play playoff hockey. Maybe April 20th, by the way, now officially announced as the start.
Yeah, if I had to bet, I would bet on the Canucks on that date, but we'll see.
The NHL broadcast would love to have the
Canucks
would. On that date. Not a long turnaround, though. You'd kind of hope from a competitive balance standpoint that it's Sunday. Also open today, fan voting for team awards. Okay. So Let's go over it quickly. Give me your votes.
All right.
Cyclone Taylor Trophy awarded to the most valuable player.
Quinn Hughes.
Walter Babe Pratt Trophy awarded to the best defenseman.
Quinn Hughes.
Pavel Bure Award, most exciting player.
JT Miller.
JT Miller, that's the right answer. Fred J. Hume Award, unsung hero. Really tough!
Pugh Suter.
See, I think that's the right answer, but only because Dakota Joshua is...
Is extremely sung right now.
Dakota Joshua has more songs written about him than, like, Jon Snow.
I think Dakota Joshua will probably end up winning it, because sometimes what the Unsung Hero Award becomes is, like, best non-star player.
Correct.
Right? So it's not actually about are people paying attention to them or not. It's just, hey, you're not a star, but you're having a really good season. But in terms of actual, like, underappreciated contributions to the team, Dakota Joshua's contributions are really significant. They're also appreciated. They've been adequately appreciated.
Adequately,
right?
Agreed.
Whereas I think Pugh Suter, his appreciations maybe have not been quite adequately appreciated to the team.
But so I think you're right. Dakota Joshua will win it as like most outstanding non-star.
Yeah.
Because that's what the award really is. But I do think Pugh Suter. So we basically have a Canucks Talk consensus going.
There you go.
Good for us.
Well, I mean, look, I guess some people will quibble with MVP, although I think it's slam dunk Quinn Hughes. Best defenseman is obviously Quinn Hughes. I think most exciting player is pretty much slam dunk JT Miller. You look at some of his individual performances, like I'd be hard pressed to think of another guy there.
And, and if we're talking style points.
Yeah.
You know, like some of the goals, some of the power forward goals 100%. That Miller has scored this season, like that one against the Avs, on and on. I mean, they've been outrageous. Outrageous form.
Yeah, I think it has to be him. So I think the only one that's really up for debate is probably the unsung hero one. And even then, like,
if you wanted to tell me Quinn Hughes, I don't get me wrong, like, I have mileage for that. If you wanted to tell me that Quinn Hughes is unsung, because people
relative to how good he is,
because some people don't think he's a slam dunk MVP guy, I'd be like, yeah, you're
you know,
right.
Who else I'd throw in there is Connor Garland.
Ooh.
Connor Garland, and like, this is another one where the award, like, people who are on a perceived high salary get like invalidated from the award because it's like, wow, what? He's making that much money. How can he be unsung? But look at where the conversation was around Connor Garland earlier in this year or coming into this season, and look how incredibly productive he's been. And I just like how key to this team producing at 5-on-5 he's been. And I think he's gotten some recognition, but I think you could easily make the case that it's not enough recognition based on how good he's been.
You're right. Connor Garland sets up the big game winner last night, and that was such a sick play. Should we move into just quickly talking about that game?
Yep.
Because Garland sets up Joshua for the game winner. The Joshua Garland connection going immediately. So it's sort of hard to put this season into context in some ways because of just how like halcyon and glowing the first bit of it was. And then this odd fact that like the team is playing better structural hockey now than they were when everything was going your way. And yet the results have been like pretty mid, frankly, since the All-Star break. I mean, you know, we're talking about the team having racked up a 580 point percentage. That's 13th best in the league. Right. We're talking about a team that's won 13 games and dropped 12. We're talking about a team with a plus two goal differential if you exclude empty net situations over the course of that. And we're now talking about a 25. Like, we're not talking about a
super small sample here. Yeah.
No. But if this was the first 25 games of the year, we'd be really optimistic about what it's going to look like for this team. You know, so it's not been negative. It's just felt more frustrating. It's felt like all the margins are narrower.
They felt a little stuck in the mud, right? Like, not that it's been a disaster, but just that every time when you think it's like, okay, they're getting hot again, then there's a couple of losses like the LA and Dallas ones, right? Where it's just, and I think they're also the narrative of losing to the other playoff teams.
It's been a repeated sort of series of games in which they've kind of struggled to score in particular against teams in their weight class, right? Even because they've won some of those games.
Yep.
But they haven't, they've been tight. They've won them. We haven't seen a convincing win over a really good team in a long time. But, yeah, so last night, you know, you get to this sort of moment where you're thinking about how exactly, like, what exactly this means, a game against the Ducks on Sunday afternoon on Easter for a team that's, like, pretty much clinched, you know, or in fact had clinched by the time the game was played. And, you know, I still think not that they had a comfortable lead over Edmonton. I mean, it mattered that they won last night, but it wasn't life and death. You didn't expect the Canucks to play at playoff intensity.
No, that's my issue with evaluating that game is that it was so far from playoff hockey.
Right.
Right. And that's all that matters now. The Canucks have put themselves in a position where all that matters is playoff hockey, and that was just not playoff hockey. And you can turn that into a negative where you say, well, like, okay, in that environment where you're playing against a bad team and you're a really good team, you should be able to come out and stomp them. But I do think the stakes and the intensity, when you've already clinched, when you've accomplished what the Canucks have this year, I think it probably is hard to bring your A game against a team like the Ducks on Sunday afternoon.
No, you're basically looking for like a workable 85%.
Yeah.
Right? And anyway, the Canucks hit that, I think. The first two periods I actually thought were pretty bad for Vancouver. Like, I was watching it thinking, man, the Canucks do not look good today. But the moment the Ducks tied it.
Yes.
That was the best 15 minutes they played all game. And, you know, again, just a microcosm of how difficult it can be to evaluate teams at this time of year, right? And, you know, additionally trying to put what's been a protracted stretch of, like, only okay results, you know, in the context, I sort of look at it like the Canucks are playing 18 holes, right? And they were, like, six under on the front nine, you know what I mean? And and yet, like, there was a lot of tee shots that ended up in the rough, but then they'd hit some spectacular shot for the eagle.
Or the shot was like going towards the rough, but then bounced off a tree trunk to the fairway.
100%. Like they've bounced off three trees and landed right at Sam Lafferty's feet. Right? But on the back nine, even though they've only been like one under, two under, you know, they've actually been playing well. Everything's been down the freeway, but a couple putts have lipped out. Right? Like some of the stuff that's going to happen to you over 18 holes has happened to them. And at the end of it, we're still going to have this team having hit like minus six on the day. It's going to have been a great round, like an excellent round. It's just that, you know, it started with the promise of being something like historic and ended up just being incredibly good. And that's fine. Like, that's kind of how I'm beginning to try and contextualize it in my own thinking about this team.
Yeah, and it always makes it like the shape of the season, I think, looms sometimes too large for us, but then you also get into what does it mean, if anything, that they're having kind of the stumble stretch, and I don't even want to say stumble, but just like the less convincing stretch in terms of results close to the playoffs. And that's always a tricky one to answer, because I know a lot of statistical analysis will go back and tell you, like, team form going into the playoffs doesn't necessarily tell you a lot about who's going to really turn it on once the playoffs come.
It doesn't, except when sometimes a team completely changes their stripes as a result of something consequential, like a trade. Like the Jeff Carter trade for the LA Kings.
Or coaching change.
The Mike Sullivan change, but also the Dan Bylsma change for the Pittsburgh Penguins the years they won. Like, there are times where you see a team spike in a major way, and there's a cause to it, and that matters down the line. Like, I think Nashville's the closest approximation we're going to find to that, where, like, this team's just kind of figured out something that I think makes them far more imposing now than they were to open the season. But for the most part, I agree.
Okay, just a couple other things I wanted to mention in the headlines quickly. Okay. One, I mean, that Dakota Joshua scored twice last night, had a monster performance. Also, Jonathan Lekaramäki and Elias Pettersson debut for Abbotsford over the weekend. So two of the team's top three prospects getting into action at the AHL level.
Ty Mueller signed
to
an ELC and assigned to Abbotsford, and Sawyer Mineo. So I'm going to do all four of these guys really quickly.
Yep.
Lekaramäki, if he's invited to the World Championship roster, will go. Clubs just kind of got a standing agreement that a player at that level, if they're invited to the Worlds, you know, is free to do so. Obviously a huge honor to wear the Trey Krenar, even if you are going to be a 13th forward, right? And maybe play like one game against Belarus or whatever. Make no mistake, like, it would be better for if Lekaramäki stayed. You know, so they played two games against Colorado. And Colorado, as you'd expect, is like filled with quad eight players who can come up and play a game for us in the Stanley Cup playoffs if we need them, right? Like, bigger than the Canucks. It's the best team in the West. Tougher than the Abbotsford Canucks. Like, way older, way more veteran. It's a really tough team to debut against. And there's going to be some growing pains learning the pro game from Lekaramäki's side. From what I understand, those showed a little bit in his American League debut, but obviously we know what he can do. And everyone's really happy that he's over here. I think the best thing would be if he could stay and be like a part of this playoff run and like really hone in on some of those two-way details of the North American pro game. Elias Pettersson, by the way. So everything I said about Colorado, right?
Yeah.
Bigger, more veteran, on and on. Like, Pettersson brought real bite to the Abbotsford Canucks lineup. I think there was real excitement around the organization with just like how quickly he clicked into the game within a game the moment he debuted on American League surface.
And understanding his role and where his value is going to be. 100%. Right.
And bringing something that the team actually needs.
Yeah.
Right. Like, that's a relatively undersized team, flat out, especially with Archdeep Baines and Vasily Podkolzin up in the on the NHL lineup. Like, they were massively outgunned in terms of the size of those two lineups in Denver this weekend. Pettersson helped address that, and there's a lot of people internally very excited about it. Ty Mueller was hurt toward the end of his season, by the way. So he's going to join the Abbotsford Canucks. Sense I get is that it's not clear whether or not he'll play.
Okay.
Okay? He's this is like get him in, pro-level reps. Sawyer Mineo, sort of the same boat, right? Like, come, learn, see what the pro game is like. He's a guy who actually has to go back to junior next year anyway.
Right.
But... yeah, they're excited to have him in. He's probably not going to get into the... well, he might get a game, but he's not going to be like a fixture in the lineup, yep. Most likely. And likewise for Ty Mueller, who they signed out of, was it Nebraska?
I believe so.
Yeah.
I just closed this HockeyDB page.
All good. 26 points in 40 games.
University of Nebraska, Omaha, yes.
Yeah, they like him. He's kind of like a high-energy, jack-of-all-trades guy, but, mm-hmm. you know, 26 points in 40 games at the age of 21 in Div 1, you know, that's not something that's, like, getting me really excited. Based on what I hear, I think that he's going to need to develop, like, an NHL, like a separating NHL
yep.
trait to his game. Which at the moment he doesn't have.
All right, that's the headlines for today. Nothing to update in the broadsheet.
Oh,
unless you have something.
I got some stuff. My sense of it is, you know, Canucks are obviously open to signing some of their expiring guys
mm-hmm.
between now and the end of the season. You know, I don't want to. Things obviously can change. I don't want to. My sense is that it's more hope than it is like urgency. A little bit different than what it has been in the past. Or at least what we saw down the stretch last season where they were locking everyone they could up to
right.
two-way deals.
So it's more, we're not opposed to it, but we're not going to push to make it happen
right.
necessarily.
Which I think tells you that, you know, if you want to stay at a very team-friendly number, we can have those conversations.
Yeah.
But we have plenty of time after the season to get the guys we need to keep done. And we all sort of know who those priority guys are going to be, including Joshua, who was obviously the star of the game last night. I get asking around, because we've talked about this a lot with Demko, like, is it good that he's going to be rested? Is it worrying that he's got a lower body injury? I mean, I'm always going to harbor the like, I need to see it. But sense I get is the organization's feeling very confident that this is going to be a weapon for them. Like, they're very confident that Demko is going to be able to come back, play a couple games. And the fact that he's going to be fresh could be an ace in their hand. So that's the other thing that I'm hearing on that. Obviously, the Lindholm situation seems a little murkier, a little cloudier, as everyone knows. And I got no real update beyond that. I get no sense of concern on Demko's status whatsoever. Still getting a little bit
right.
on Lindholm.
All right, good updates there. Lineup notes. The team's on the practice ice right now, I believe. Now, one thing I did see from Randeep Janda, Dakota Joshua was getting some reps on power play one. However, that might be because Brock Besser left practice at some point. He was on the ice to start. Then he left. So we don't have any update on that right now. We'll get it to you when we get one. Also, in terms of lineup notes, Rick Tocchet saying after the game yesterday, Elias Lindholm will go on the road trip. Thatcher Demko won't, which makes sense. Interesting that Lindholm's going to make the trip. I mean, I guess it fits with a day-to-day designation, which is what they still are saying in regards to Elias Lindholm. But as you said, that situation murky at best right now, given the extended absence now from Elias Lindholm. Playoff forecast, Canucks still with a 65% chance to win the Pacific Division. That was an important win against the Ducks after Edmonton had just beaten the Ducks on Saturday to kind of keep the race at the status quo with that 65% chance to win. So the Canucks have 100 points right now, 8 more games. They can max out 116. Oilers are at 94. I believe they have 10 more games, so they can max out at 114. So if you're thinking how many points do the Canucks need to feel really comfortable in the division? Now, a lot depends on whether or not they beat Edmonton in that final matchup, but I'm probably like you need to get to at least 108 to feel good about your chances, given how Edmonton's playing. Something like that.
I think you'd want a little better.
Yeah, 110.
It's going to be decided between 108 and 110. I'd expect both teams to get there.
I think if you get to 110, you're feeling really, really good. Not that it's a guarantee, but if you get
so
there, that's feeling really
10
good.
10 of your next 16.
10 of your next 16, yeah. And then Edmonton would have to match that. Edmonton would have to take 16 out of 20.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, that could be over this week. Oilers' upcoming schedule, Blues today, Stars on Wednesday, Avalanche on Friday, Flames on Saturday, second leg of a back-to-back. They then are going to have a sequence with the Golden Knights on Wednesday and then Vancouver and the Coyotes back to back. So like this stretch
busy. Yeah,
this stretch right here is incredibly condensed and has like four of the best teams in the West coming at you. I talked a little bit about running out the clock, and if the Canucks had dropped that game to Anaheim, I'd maybe be feeling a little bit tight in the collar today.
Mm-hmm.
But I just think Edmonton's got too much schedule density here. Do you see that Dan Riccio stat?
About Connor McDavid? More assists than anyone else has points since the All-Star break.
I hate to give Dan any credit, but what a pull. That blew my mind when I saw it today.
Yeah, he's playing really, really well right now. And by the way, per Dom Lucision's model, most likely first-round opponents for the Vancouver Canucks: Vegas, number one at 33%, LA at 31%, Nashville at 28%. So basically a really tight three-way tie there between those three teams as most likely first-round playoff opponent.
Yeah, and I went and saw Nashville this weekend in Denver. I was in Denver for a bachelor party, and we went to see that game, which, by the way, thrilling. Like, what a great game. Mm-hmm. So much offense. And I hadn't been to a game like with beers in hand and the boys just like watching from the stands in like 8 years. Honestly, I haven't. And you know what? Next season I'm making a point, and maybe even this playoffs, I'm making a point. I got to do it like once every five games. Mm. Well, maybe that's too much. I got to do it at least once a season to remind myself to like see it like a fan.
Sure.
Be it resolved.
Yeah, all right. We'll hold you to that.
Please.
We'll
please
keep
do.
You accountable.
Please do.
By the way, just before we get to the gambling odds, tweet from Randy Janda. Tockett says Besser left practice for maintenance reasons. So there's your update on Brock Besser. A lot of maintenance happening.
Maintenance, though, usually is pre-scheduled.
Yeah, you don't go on the ice.
So that's one that makes you go, hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And like, hmm, like Marge, not hmm, like Homer. Just want to update the Norris Trophy odds.
Okay.
Because Cale Makar briefly retook the scoring lead.
Mm-hmm.
Quinn Hughes took it back on Sunday. Phew. But it's going to be close enough that you hope those sleepy voters in their 9 p.m. bedtimes don't miss or whiff on the fact that like Hughes's impact in Vancouver is far more McKinnon-like, you know, than mm-hmm. it is Makar-like. Makar has been not a key driver for the Avs relative to McKinnon this season. They've played so much ice time together. It's just like a different setup than almost any other defenseman has in the league, which isn't to besmirch a defenseman in Cale Makar, who I still think is, you know, and should like have the best defenseman on the planet belt. But he hasn't been the best defenseman on the planet this season. That's been Quinn Hughes, and it's been Quinn Hughes by a bullet. However, between Roman Josi leading the Predators on this incredible run and Cale Makar neck and neck with Quinn Hughes in the scoring race, Hughes's Norris odds have dropped just a little bit from +650 or -650 last time we did this program to -550. The field, remember I was touting the field as a mm-hmm. good way to bet this, up to +375. So narrowing just a touch.
Mm-hmm. Just still maybe a little bit, one more signature performance.
One more
or so
signature performance
from Quinn Hughes feels like where we are to really, really lock that up. But still, the overwhelming favorite or the prohibitive favorite right now. All right, we will take a break. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Lots more to get into. I want to talk about Dakota Joshua a little bit and some of the lineup tinkering we've seen from Rick Tocchet as well. More on that. Gemma Carson-Smith will join us at 1 o'clock. It is Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650.